This is RSBNB Update, episode 349, recorded Friday, February 24th, 2012. Nod your head. Hello, everybody. Thank you for being with us for this episode of RSBNB Update. Tricky's here, as always.
Hey, everybody.
He's a little short on sleep, so we're gonna try and go easy on him this episode, not force him to make any controversial decisions.
You do that every episode, Shane.
Not intentionally. So, this week we got some RS updates. Well, one primary RS update, then a few community items, and then we're going to be introducing our new feature, which we'll get to shortly. So it's a pretty full show, so let's just get started with the Dominion Tower update featuring the boss that was shown at RuneFest, Sunfreaked.
Okay.
This thing looks like a dragon, but I don't believe that dragon fire shields help you out in protecting you. It's worth noting that it's combat level 530. Its max melee hit is over 1,000. And its mage hit is roughly half that. So it's something that you want to take seriously. But since this was a featured update at RuneFest, Jagex did include a level 80 version that people can go to fight just to see the new NPC in action and to get a feel of what Dominion Tower is actually about.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll find it on special mode, and those defeating this new high-level NPC will have a new achievement on their Dominion marker. And the marker will change visually to show that you have indeed killed Sunfreaked. Because at combat level 530, that is quite the accomplishment. They say there's no rewards for defeating the easier version, but this is a way to learn about Dominion Tower and maybe ultimately go fight Dominion Tower NPCs later on. Because if you like killing the level 80 version, you'll like killing the rest of things in Dominion Tower. I know for me personally, Dominion Tower was one of my favorite updates of 2011. So I'm happy to see that this has made its way into the game.
Yeah. Last time I went there, I kept dying to the Pest Queen. For some, like the archers there would not attack the spinners and just kept healing her, regardless of what enemies were in the area. And it was just so annoying that I wasted. Two inventories of rock tails, and I still couldn't beat her because the archers wouldn't kill it, would not kill the healers, and it was so annoying.
You know, that's one of the things I like about Dominion Tower is that each time you're in climber mode, you have to choose a handicap, and these handicaps are random, and I've always liked the element of randomness, so that was one of the things that made Dominion Tower appealing to me. So, I might have to go back there one day and do the full range of activities and fight it to the top and get all the rewards I could get and whatnot. We'll see. We'll see. So, there's really not much else to say about Sunfreaked except to go check this out because it's quite an interesting fight the way it works. For instance, one of the attacks is a fire attack. The fireballs come down and they just deal rapid damage to you, like huge amounts. I think they range between 1 and 3 life points, but they're quick enough that they do indeed make an impact. So
is it like a meteor shower type of thing?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. Yeah. So the trick for that is to, of course, run out of the way, and then once that attack is finished, you can run up to the actual creature and use your melee attack on it. But just to be clear here, I only killed the level 80 version because I did not feel like equipping to fight the level 530 version and as Trekkie said, invest a huge amount of resources into it.
You may get lucky.
Well, you don't really get much from killing it, aside from the upgraded Dominion marker.
Fragging rights, Shane.
Yeah, but it doesn't really mean anything. So,
if you say anyways, so.
Other Dominion Tower updates this week include the ability to carry multiple sets of Goliath Swift and Spellcaster gloves. I know this is something that the people who do Slayer were very excited about and wanted for a long time, because you would have these gloves, but you could only have one set with you at a time, and that didn't really make sense. So I'm glad they changed this, and I know lots of people who do Slayer are glad they changed it as well.
Anything else you want to add about the boss, Shane?
No, not really.
Okay, so should we move on to tweaks and fixes then?
Well, I just wanted to mention a few other Dominion Tower things, including the fact that when you're fighting and if you need elemental spells and say you're on the ancient spellbook, your spellbook will automatically change now.
Mm-hmm.
Power-up items can now be converted to XP books, providing you don't withdraw them from the chest. Better spectator angles. So I guess that before. That's good.
I used that before.
I don't remember what the angles were like.
Very bad. It was, you're basically looking at the back row of a Colosseum.
Okay.
So you're not looking very well.
It is now possible to skip taunt and victory cutscenes. That's good. Wasted a good deal of time. And they've upped the conversion rate of Dominion Factor to XP to a level that they feel is competitive. So basically they wanted to make it so that people would get a decent amount of XP from there, but not so much that it would become a new full-fledged training method.
Mm-hmm.
So we're happy about that. All right, tweaks and fixes now.
Oh, you want me to go?
Yeah, sure, read the first one.
All right, let's see. Well, for one thing, a new total XP tooltip has been added to the stat interface while hovering over the level gained. Runecrafting essence pouches now have a left-click option, which will change depending if it's filled or empty.
This has been needed since the pouches came out.
I don't know. I actually screwed myself up when I was runecrafting Astro. I was like, why am I not getting these things out? And I realized, oh, I'm clicking fill this whole time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's good to have this option now.
But it's going to screw with your mind until you've done it quite a few times. Definitely nice messed with me when I was doing it.
Nice play. I just heard that. You got the window open today?
Yeah. Window's open.
Oh, that's nice. You can have the window open. It's too cold here to have the windows open.
It's like 80 degrees here.
What? Oh, my. Are you serious?
No. Oh. Well, when I say 80, I was like between 60 and 75, around that.
Okay. Well, that's still pretty warm. It's currently -4 right here, Celsius. Hmm. That's the proper way to count temperature, by the way.
Go away.
Next up, Hattie and Skull have returned to their icy homes. Remember that you have until May 17th to use your XP boosts from the gloves and boots. And finally, something that we mentioned last week would be nice to have, and it's here now. The pronunciation guide. So they say, is it right to say Ardoyan or Ardogny? Not sure Ardogny. If it's Tazar or plain Tazar.
Actually,
so let's have a look.
Let's have a look. Let's see. Alcahard rhymes with hide, so Alcahide. Alcahide. Okay. Ardoin. I was trying to figure out. I was actually trying to figure out if the Y was supposed to be an E or something. Like, I was trying to figure out if it was supposed to be like a long E this whole time.
And apparently, what we've been calling Tazar is Zar. So Zar.
Okay.
And Tuztok Jad rather than Tiztog Jad. And Troll Weiss is Troll Vice, So I guess the trolls are German.
See, nein ist not is like, nee is not.
Do you want to go to Tollweiss?
No.
Tollweiss,
Shane, I don't speak German.
I think German's a nice language.
If you wanted to say something really, really long.
And another nice thing about German is that it feels like whenever you hear German people talking really fast, really loud, it sounds like they're yelling, when in fact they're not yelling, but that's just the way the language presents itself.
So do Chinese.
Oh, really?
You listen. Yes. Shane, you haven't been to Chinatown around your area, have you?
No.
Exactly. Just go to Chinatown and just sit there for like 30 seconds. And anybody who's Asian knows what I'm talking about.
Well, give us an example.
No. I'm too tired. Besides, I'm going to get screwed if my parents come down and they see me. Yeah. Not a good thing to do. All right.
Darok rather than Darok. Let's see. Is there any other ones here that we have had trouble with before?
How do you pronounce the Elvish place?
Privenus.
Okay. That's how I'll remember
Privenus. Emphasis on the the. Privenus. Anyways,
wait, what the hell?
It's good. Thank you, Jagex, for having this pronunciation key. It's been something I've wanted for a long time, and it'll become a great toolkit for me. But go ahead, Trekkie.
Check out that one. Mashana. It's supposed to be pronounced as Bob. I wonder if that's a Men in Black reference.
Why?
Because there's an alien. There are two alien twins, and one of them is Kariluka, and the other one is Bob.
So oh, I wonder maybe. If
that. it looks like a reference to it, considering what the original name, the phrase is, doesn't look anything like Bob.
Oh, and they got Jagex on here too, Jagex.
Okay, Jatizo. Let's see, anything else? All right, I think we've milked this forever way we could anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Jatiso is Jatiso, and I guess that means Nate is not. Oh, that's great. Anyways, thank you for that, Jagex. Do you have anything you want to mention off the release notes? I don't.
Nah, not really. Everything else is kind of a little bug fix here and there anyway.
Okay. All right, next up, Poppy and the Patrons of Pain Valentine's Battlefield. So this is a battlefield for the Clan Citadel. It's currently available as one of the example designs. So basically what you need to do is you need to go into the Clan Citadel and load up the example that looks like it has two hearts on it, then save it as one of your layouts. Then you can play it. So they say that Mod Poppy has teamed up with Kinky Spango and the Pink Patrons of Pain to create a Valentine's battlefield suited to the season of love. Huge thanks to Kinky Spango and the clan for their help in creating the battlefield. In their map, you will need to traverse the icy chambers of a frozen heart, battle monsters, and compete to capture the flag in a romantic rumble to end them all.
Romantic rumble to end them all.
Yeah. Mm.
Sounds like, you know, 10 guys trying to chase after one girl.
And she I wouldn't doubt that given, you know, the fact that that's probably what most of the people playing RuneScape would like to be doing.
Yeah.
So, anyways, if you're at all interested in those kind of battlefields, have a look. Next up, Players Gallery number 32. This is the Valentine's Day / Unvalentine's Day special. You know, I agree with their first choice here, actually, as the winner. If you have a look at that. I mean, the people look real for a change. They don't have the same old anime perspective that people always tend to think people in the Middle Age would have. You know, it just doesn't make sense to draw RuneScape characters as anime characters. Granted, they might be easy to draw, but it just doesn't make sense to do such a thing.
Yeah, well, this is also coming from a guy who's not a big fan of anime in the first place.
There you go.
Yeah, so don't take it to heart, kids. Especially you Japanese people.
Why, you think lots of people out there who play RS like anime?
I would say so.
Okay.
Especially, you never know what people may be doing anyway in their spare time.
Anyways, I agree with them that this first one is good. I don't quite know about Soul Flower, but Baby Troll is also good. That's a nice one that looks like a vector drawing, so 1 and 3 are pretty good.
Moonlit Night is nice.
Which one?
Moonlit Night.
Okay.
That's a tongue twister there. Oh, that's like a little, it's a little Lord of the Rings thing over there with that picture.
See, here we go again. In Love with a Vampire. That's one of those anime style drawings again.
Where was that one?
Maybe that person is trying to come up with something like Twilight.
Shane?
Yes?
Thou shalt not mention Twilight on this podcast. It is forbidden.
Oh, it's been mentioned before. Anyways.
It's not worth it.
That's the player's gallery for January. You can go have a look-see and see what you want to mention or take a look at there. And they also say that the next gallery will be pretty much any type of theme that you want, so feel free to send it in. And they need those entries by March 19th. So if you're any kind of artist, that's your deadline to send something in. I know I'm not an artist. The best I can do is really a stick figure. So.
Oh, Shay, I have the best stick figure drawing in the world, man. You draw a circle and a line. And then you add in four diagonal lines, and then you poke like two dots and a crescent. There you go.
Yeah, and then those people come alive right out of the paper and jump right out at you and become just as real as they could ever be, and you play RS with them and you spend lots of free time with them.
Living in a fantasy world, Shane.
Well, sometimes I need to live in a fantasy world, take into account what I need to put up with in some places.
All right, I'm not going to ask what that is, so I'll just leave it be.
That's all we got for RS updates this week. Dominion Tower, be sure to go check that out. Read the pronunciation guide, that's good. And, of course, play some Clan Citadel Battlefield and send your entries in for the March Gallery, which is due on the 19th.
Yay.
All right. So that brings us to the end of RS updates. A little bit shorter than last week because we're not discussing a quest at length. So now is the time when we mention our next week's our new feature that we're adding. Some of you might remember that last week I mentioned we are going to be starting something new this week, and that is indeed true. So this new feature is called RSBNB Update Focus. Basically, what Focus is it's a little sit down with me or Trekkie and somebody else that we talk to them about something in RuneScape, whether it be a skill, a mini game, or basically we just go into depth on one specific subject. So you can kind of think of it as a mini skill guide for something, or maybe a guide about how to do something. So we are launching that this week with the Fight Kiln, which makes sense because, you know, the Fight Kiln came out last week and it's a hard update to wrap your head around. So it makes sense that we should talk about it a bit and give you guys some help in order to accomplish it if you want to. As promised, here is the episode of Focus featuring the Fight Kiln. and we got somebody who you guys probably know to discuss this with. You should remember Raji from last year, our bot killing special, and of course RuneFest. So hello again, Raji.
What's up?
So we're here to talk about the Fight Guild, that update that was released mid-February, in which requires a player to sacrifice a fire cape in order to even have an attempt at acquiring the new cape, which I'm not sure if there's a street name for it yet, but the Tazar name is Takhar Kal.
I think everybody just seems to call it the new fire cape.
Even though it's not exactly a fire cape, that's all right, I guess. So we're going to give you guys a bit of a rundown on this cape and what exactly you need to do to be successful in making an attempt at achieving one of these capes from the fight kilns. So let's first start off here with discussing a bit about the cape, particularly the stats of the cape. So it's well known that this cape is supposed to be the logical successor to the fire cape. Would you agree with that summarization?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm looking at the stats now, and honestly, it's pretty close to the max cape, which is, I don't know whether that's disappointing or good, because it sort of gives an alternative to people who don't want to get 99 in all skills, which is no easy feat by any means. But it's +3 in all attack styles, +12 in all defense styles, +8 strength, which is amazing, +2 prayer. I think the only bonus that the max cape actually has that is superior, really, is the prayer bonus. But other than that, it seems to be pretty similar. And yeah, it is a nice cape. I think if you can do it, it's a really sort of nice alternative to one of the higher tier capes like the max cape or the completionist cape. So it is well worth getting.
Okay. That was the thing that I was wondering about when I was doing the actual podcast on this update, was the prayer stats for this cape, only +2. Do you think that should be higher given capes like the Soul Cape have higher ones, higher prayer boost?
Possibly. I think it could have done with a little bit more prayer bonus, but then again, I guess it's supposed to sort of... its strong point is supposed to be the strength bonus, like the general combat offensive bonuses on it, rather than the defensive. So, not really sure. There will be pros and cons to it, but I think they were trying to sort of make it so that the max cape would be better in situations like possibly Slayer, maybe. I'm not sure where you need prayer points. And the other one will be better in, say, God Wars situations, possibly, where you need the strength bonus. But I don't know, I guess it could be substituted either way. The only improvement I can really suggest for it is that they edit it so that it can be used with Ice Strike Worms, because it doesn't really make sense that the Fire Cape can be used with Ice Strike Worms, but this one can't be, because it is technically... I think that they wanted to get the idea that the cape
is a requirement for this cape.
Yeah, exactly. So it would make sense. I've heard it through reading high level forums. It has been discussed, and they're also considering changing the way it looks. Like, because people have complained that it's quite plain. Honestly, I think it looks pretty good myself. They sort of went for the whole obsidian / armadillo kind of look, which I think they've done pretty well, but I think they could have made it look a little bit more interesting. Someone from High Level Forums, I believe, quite a few people probably know Cape Licker. She's a really, 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 really good graphics designer, and she designed a version of it which looks insane. I could probably find that picture for you if you want and pull it up, but she drew it, and it looks absolutely amazing. But whether they'll do that or not, honestly, she should definitely be in graphics for Jagex, put it that way. I'll try and find it for you.
Yeah, that'd be good if you could find that. So we know it's not a fire cape and that you can't use it at the Ice Strike Worms. Its primary claim to fame is its strong defense bonuses and strength bonus. So that kind of says where you'd want to use such a cape. But is there anywhere that you wouldn't want to use such a cape? I mean, aside from prayer point, places where you need high prayer point regeneration?
Possibly if you were doing magic, then a god cape would be better. But range as well, because obviously it doesn't have the accumulator in it. But yeah, anything melee, possibly it would be good for. But like for range or magic, I would say, you know, an accumulator or one of the god capes from the mage arena would be better to use personally, because those give bonuses in those stats. But I mean, I don't know, I guess people sort of like fashion prodding it up and maybe just sort of sacrifice the bonuses for the cape if you know, if they like the look of that cape, and obviously to show, like, you know, to show off a little bit, because it is quite an awesome cape. You don't see very many of them, because it's no easy feat. It really isn't, like, especially if you're not into sort of things like PVM, it is really difficult. And I think, to be honest, to get the cape the first time I tried it, I got pretty lucky, because it was literally like I logged on after the quest, after the update, did the quest, went straight into the kiln with what I thought would be good gear, and finished it. So it was like, I don't know, I did get pretty lucky, but it took me a while because I didn't use the combat triangle.
Okay. So let's be clear, you did this cape on your first attempt and it was successful.
Yeah, but okay. I did have pretty expensive gear. So all right. It's not really gear that's available to everybody without, you know, yeah, sort of things okay. Like a Divine and Torva kind of thing.
So let's talk about some of this. So your stats are, I assume, are maxed across the board. So yeah. That was something that helped a bit. Now, do you think there's a certain minimum? I know JX recommends 90 plus, but would you say that has to be higher than 90 plus for your combat stats and whatnot?
I honestly don't. I think 90 is a sort of a generalization, because they sort of generalize that with experience at the same time, because I've seen people that have sort of, you know, they're brilliant at PVM, but they can't do Jad. But because Jad is, you know, you have to fight 7 Jads throughout this and 2 of them on the same wave, it's like, you've got to, you know, you have to know what you're doing with Jad, because if you don't know where you stand, that is a major falling point, because he can one hit you. But if you've got the experience and you know, like, exactly how Jad works and, you know, how to sort of kill him without being touched or particular gear to wear, then I think you'll be fine. But it's mainly the experience with the Jads that I think is the hard part. If you don't know how to do Jad, it would be well worth practicing. Because, yeah, obviously it costs a fire cape in the first place, which means you've got to have at least killed it once. But you don't get the healers in the fight kiln, which I think's a nice thing, because it makes it... the Jad is sort of upgraded, because I believe all combat damage on it is halved. I'm not sure. I haven't, you know, tried double check that before this thread goes up on the forums. But I'm pretty sure all combat XP is halved on the Tokar Jad. I'd have to double check that though. But yeah, okay. Definitely the Jad experience.
And now equipment. You mentioned full Torva, Divine.
That's overpowered equipment. You don't need that to do it. Yeah, you could do it with, I'd say definitely Bandos or Armadale and possibly Ganodermic, but I mean Torva and Pernix and things like that. It just sort of, you know, it obviously helps, but it's not required to do it. As again, it's more the experience rather than the gear. If you know how to sort of cope well with a lot of different types of monsters in situations, like the fight caves, I guess it's an alright example, because in the higher waves, like the 50s and the 60s, you get like waves with like 180s and 360s, and you've got to prioritize the monsters to get rid of the ones that are going to hurt you most. Like in the fight kiln, there's a wave with Jad and a 360, but obviously because you can't really take your mage pre off, because the 360 is maging you, or the 360 is their 400 in there, but the 360 is opposed to the fight cave, so it's a major, and they hit like 500s with mage. So if you take mage pre-off, you're going to get bashed by Jad and that, but at the same time you can't range pre, so you're still getting bashed by Jad's range pre, so you've got to take out the 360 as quick as possible so you can switch to Jad's attacks so you don't get damaged. So it's more of like a prioritization kind of sort of technique, really. Okay. that you've got to have with it.
All right. So just to recap then, Bandos, potentially Armadale, maybe Gandermic or something like that as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And now for the inventory setup. You say you need to focus on the combat triangle as much as possible. So that probably means you need all three types of combat, correct?
Yeah. I would. You don't need it, but it is definitely recommended. It will make it a hell of a lot easier for you. Like, I mean,
okay.
Storm of Armadale is also that I found wrecks the final boss because it just hits so hard. Things like that one are weak to certain attacks. Like that is definitely weak to mage, and because Storm of Armadale is obviously the strongest mage spell out there, if you preserve one of the magic crystals until the end, you can literally hit like 800s to 900s with it, and you can destroy it pretty quickly. It just depends really if it, you know, the combat triangle is stronger against things that, you know, like say melee against a ranger would be stronger than mage against a ranger because they're sort of, you know, it's got to be done that way. It's not like that in the fight caves, but I think they try to make it so it does require an element of skill and thought rather than just sort of, you know, endurance.
Okay. Also, you say that you need a pickaxe, of course, too, when you're in fighting.
Yeah.
So I assume that's to take the armor away off of the kept ill?
Yeah, those are not my favorite monsters by any means. There is, I think it's wave 27, where you go in there and there is literally like 8 of them in the same arena. And because if you melee, they hit pretty hard with melee, but they hit even harder with their special attack, which they do randomly. And if you protect from melee, they will do it more. But you can't negate the damage at all. It's just a sort. It doesn't have an attack style kind of thing. It's like can't really describe. I think it's sort of it looks like a magical attack or a range attack, but you can't protect against it. Like, I think I was wearing a divine at one point, and it was still hitting 350s, which was its max, and it. I went through a lot of bruise the first time I went through that wave because I didn't know what to do, and I was protecting from melee to protect myself from its main attacks when I didn't realize that if you don't pray at all, it will hit you less. And you've got to sort of, rather than fighting them all at the same time, you've got to drag like one or two off to a corner and kill them off slowly, because if you just go into the middle and fight them all, you'll just get dropped in seconds because of their attacks.
All right. As regard for food, potions, that sort of thing, what exactly of that type did you bring? And did you use flasks?
Yeah, I think flasks are definitely necessary. They're not really that expensive. Well, I guess they are. But if you've got the levels, you can go and get 50 a day from mining them and creating them into flasks, which does help quite a lot, and obviously you get 6 doses rather than 4. And the nice thing about them is that you don't have to drop them after you're done. It will just fill up an invent. It will take away an invent space because the flasks disappear. So if you finished a potion, you'll get invent spaces from it. So you can pick up the crystals to use to your advantage throughout, which is quite nice. It's probably recommended to sort of leave one invent space as you go in, because you on the first wave you get an invulnerability crystal, which I think it's 10 seconds or something like that. Nothing can damage you. So it's quite useful to keep a couple of them for the wave with the 2 Jads.
Okay.
So you're not getting hit, so you can take them down, or one of them down as quickly as possible. And then once you've got one of them down, it's easy, really. You can just, you've just got one other Jad. So you can, if you know how to press, which you shouldn't find that difficult at all, after you've taken the first one down.
And these are power-up crystals, including invulnerability, restoration, magic, range, strength, and constitution, which boost the aforementioned skills. So that does sound like that is something else you will want to take advantage of when they're presented to you.
Yeah, it really depends sort of what... I wouldn't personally use the melee ones because it lowers your defense stats as well. I find the magic one works really well. The restoration one works brilliant if, you know, you should... I was using those sort of efficiently. I was waiting until my hit points was low and I was almost out of prayer before using it because it restores it fully. Then things like the constitution one you would use on a wave possibly with the two jards. It depends what you would rather use, that or the invulnerability one, because whereas your max life points is more, so you would technically heal more than you would, say, if you had like a unicorn and you used the constitution crystal, it would boost your max life points. And because a unicorn heals off a percentage of your max life points rather than your, how many life points you have or your level, it's pretty useful and it would heal more. Like, brews do that as well. I think that's one of the main reasons why people like Nex Armor so much, because it boosts your max life points rather than your actual life points. So when you're healing using brews or unicorns, it heals considerably more.
Okay, so you clearly do need potion flasks, and you want to take advantage of these lava crystals that are in the arena. Is there any other key inventory items that you can think of? Potentially, maybe, I don't know, overload potions maybe, or a pack yak, or I don't know.
I would definitely say overloads are necessary. You could probably do it without if you got very, very lucky, but overloads I would definitely suggest. When I was doing it, I took 4 flasks, so that's 4 6 doses, but I didn't use my last one, but I would probably take 3 or 4 to be safe. It's pretty difficult. It just depends what you would rather do. So,
okay. And is it food like rocktails, or is it Ceridomin brews and restore potions instead to heal up?
Definitely brews the whole way, definitely.
Okay, all right. Anything else besides the pickaxe that somebody should bring absolutely for sure?
The ring that you get from the Tazar quest is quite recommended, because that adds 10% of damage onto any damage you do to the Tazar creatures.
The obsidian or the fire creatures. Okay.
But the problem is they haven't updated it yet, so it's quite expensive. It's 50k tokel to repair from any sort of degradation rather than sort of custom amount from whatever, which is, I don't know, it seemed like they sort of rushed that one and they just wanted to get some sort of solution out there before the quest came out. But I heard that they are going to change that, so it's cheaper depending on how many you've spent. And yeah, it is probably recommended to use, because it helps all 3 attack styles as well. So nice. That probably any auras that you have, Reverence, Penance, Vampirism, any other combat ones like that would be recommended. I believe I used Penance and Reverence because of the prayer bonuses that they have. But if you're a PVMer, you probably have ones like that anyway. A lot of people have Reverence because that was on sale on the first day that the loyalty rewards came out. So if you've got Reverence, use that. And any other possible combat ones.
All right, so now that we've covered that, shall we move on to the actual information about the fight?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so there's 37 waves, and as you mentioned, there is a wave where you do need to fight 2 Jads, but there's actually 7 of them in total that need to be fought. So as we mentioned before, it's not something that you can do just walking in. You kind of have to have practiced doing the original fight caves to be able to kill Jad effectively. So with Jad, there will be a total of 10 different NPCs that you've encountered. So let's just go through some of these here and discuss what their combat method is and the best way to kill them. So first up, Tokhar Hur. Level 100.
Tokhar Hur. Those are pretty basic NPCs. If you've got Soul Split, they're pretty good to heal off because they're just the little work minions. They just attack with melee. There's nothing complicated about them. One of the first waves that you get, you'll get like 10 or 12 of these in the same wave. They do have quite a lot of life points, but they're taken down pretty easily with mage. Yeah, but you should probably take advantage of these and soul split them if you have that, because they're really easy. They're not going to hit you for very much. Possibly protect from melee against them, but other than that, you'll be fine.
All right. Tokhar Zil, combat level 140.
Those are the level 140 versions of the level 90s, which are in the fight caves. Okay. Tokzil. So they are range-based creatures. They are weak to melee. So if you've got melee, possibly a rapier or a whip or something like that, you could attack those and take them down pretty quickly with melee. Possibly protect from range, as they are quite accurate with range attacks. Other than that, there's nothing really too complicated about them. So I think they do attack you with melee as well if you're close to them, but they're not really very accurate with melee. It's their range attacks that they profess in.
Okay. Tokhar Tokzil, level 200.
I think you've got that one in the Zeal and the Tokhar Tokzil mixed up, possibly. I think they're the same creatures.
Tokhar Tok. I don't know. Whatever you think. Tokhar Tokzil.
I could double check, but yeah. Okay. We'll go back to it. I'll check that.
All right. Well, one we're certain of is the mage. Tokhar Mej, level 160.
Yeah, those are pretty nasty. You want to mage prey because these things will mage and melee, but they are, because they're mainly mage-based creatures, they're really weak against range. So it would definitely be recommended to prey mage. I think you get a wave with like 8 of these in of them. And if you're trying to melee them all, they drain your prayer as well. So it's better to just range them and use the rocks in the room provided and safe spot as many of them as you can and just take them down one or two at a time, because they do drain your prayer pretty quickly and they can hit a lot with magic. So it's they don't hit like high, but they hit really accurately. So
okay. And now your favorite, Tokhar Ketdil.
Yeah, those. I would honestly, with waves with these in, I would take these down first because they are nasty. They are really, really nasty. You obviously need a pickaxe for these. Only rune or dragon will work. If you can't afford dragon, rune obviously would be the better alternative, unless you can lend a dragon from somebody. But I think the rune takes them down in 6 hits, and the dragon takes their armor down in 3 hits. I might be slightly wrong on that, but it's something similar. But you want to take their armor down with the pickaxe as quick as possible, because you can't sort of do any damage to them with any attack styles until that armor is gone. And then possibly safe spot them behind a rock and mage them would be the best way. But whatever you do, do not prim me, because they will absolutely destroy you with their attacks. But they're gonna do their special attack randomly anyway, but they will do it a lot more if you protect from melee, because it means they can't hit you with their primary attack, so they have to do that to damage you. It's sort of like a really nasty combat technique that they have. So be careful. Okay. With those.
All right. So this next one looks surprisingly familiar at like the level 360 in the original Fight Caves, and that's Ketzek. So I assume it's the same kind of magic based combat level 400 creature.
Yeah, those are obviously known as the 360s and the Fight Caves. The problem with, well, actually, I was really surprised when I saw these new ones, because I saw the concept art of them, and they'd made them really, really, really big. And I was like, wow, like, they actually are really intimidating compared to the ones that were there before. And these ones look metallic and fiery and obsidian-y, then really nasty, but they are just as nasty as the ones in the Fight Caves. You can protect from mage and range them from a distance, because obviously mage is strong against magic in the combat triangle, or you can melee them if you wish, but I wouldn't recommend standing next to them to melee them. Sort of hit them once and run backwards and forwards so it doesn't melee you, but it's a lot easier to just range them. So yeah, just protect from magic with these, and range them would be the best approach.
All right. Mezhkot?
These ones are really easy, actually. They're melees, and they don't have the same traits that they do in the Fight Caves, because in the Fight Caves, they're the 180s, but they will heal anything nearby that's damaged, so you'd want to take these out first. They're sort of the big version of the Jad healers. But the thing with these is that they're really basic, and all they will do is melee you. So as long as you pray melee, you're pretty much fine. You can melee these to death pretty quickly, although magic is the strong point. So if you've got magic, then definitely mage these and pray melee, and you should be fine. But yeah, they don't really hit very hard. I think their max is like 250 or something like that.
Okay. And Takar Ket?
I think...
Which is level 180, I think.
Let me think. I'm pretty sure that is Amelia, but I'm not
100%. Yeah, I remember reading they were melee, so...
Yeah, probably just protect from melee and use magic, and you'll be alright against these.
Alright, then of course Jad, level 780 this time around, no healers, so is it safe to assume that fighting Jad in here is the same as fighting Jad in the original Fight Caves?
Similar. It is more difficult to hit, I find, but it is easier in the sense that you don't have to worry about the healers. You can just sort of go at him, sort of thing. Just use your prayer switching techniques. If you've got, you're going to get waves with things like the 180s or the level 200s and the 360s or the 400s in the same wave, and you've got to prioritize, because you've got to think, so if there's a 360 in Jad, you've got to protect from mage, because you've got two things maging you rather than one, and sort of just tank Jad's range attack until you've taken down the 360, so you can focus on Jad itself. I would probably, unless you've got a wave like, I can't really think of any examples, but I would take down the monsters around Jad, the ones that are going to damage you more, rather before you actually kill Jad itself, because it takes longer to kill and you're going to get damaged more by the other creatures around you first. So,
okay. And then this brings us to the final boss, a level 800 by the name of Har Aken. So you said Storm of Armadale worked really well on this creature?
Yeah, from my own personal experience, it does work really, really, really well. When you get this boss, you're going to get a bunch of tentacles around the room that will attack you based off their attack styles that are in brackets next to their name. So you'd get like Har Aken tentacle, and then in brackets range. So those ones would hit you with range. So what you want to do, based off the gear that you're in, say if you're in Ganodermic maging, you'd want to take down the range ones, because Ganodermic is weak against range, or take down the mage ones if you're going to protect from range. You just want to sort of prioritize one attack style over another and just use ones that you're protected against rather than that you're not. So you take as little damage as possible. But you don't really tend to take much damage on this wave if you're praying. It's really not that difficult. And then every so often, I think it's every three tentacles, two or three tentacles that you kill, the head will pop up. And you've just got to do as much damage on the head as possible before it disappears. So it would be best to use the magic crystals right as the head pops up and then just bash it with magic as much as you can before it disappears. It'll probably take two or three attempts on the head before you actually kill it, possibly four, depending on what your approach is. But it's really not as hard as they made out to it. I think it's more of an endurance kind of thing. You get through this entire kiln, and then you get to the final boss, and they want you to be able to beat it if you've beaten the rest of it, rather than sort of get through the whole thing and then get bashed at the final wave and die. But the problem was, well, if you run out of prayer on that wave, it is pretty deadly. So you just, as long as you've got prayer and you're protecting from magic and range, you're going to be fine. But Storm of Armadale is definitely the best approach to use on it.
All right. So that pretty much sums up all of the NPCs that you'll have to fight in order to get this cape. So before we wrap up, is there any little suggestions that you'd just like to throw out there?
I would suggest practice. If you've got access to tormented demons, they're a good way to practice, to sort of, you know, get used to switching your prayers based on attack styles and sounds rather than, you know, sticking to one prayer, because you're going to need to do that throughout the Jad waves. There's no way you probably could do it without being able to prayer switch, unless you got really, really, really lucky. But yeah, definitely you're going to need some prayer switching techniques for the Jads, because you're going to find it very, very, very difficult otherwise. So yeah, practice on TDs, or obviously practice on the main Jad itself. It's up to you. TDs are easier to get to, so it's probably best to use those. And they don't hit you quite as hard as Jad does as well, so you could, you know, use those as experience. But yeah, definitely practice with those and you should be fine.
All right. Anything else before we tie this off?
Not really, other than just sort of leave an invent space when you go in to pick up the first one or two crystals. And use the rocks as safe spots as much as you possibly can, rather than just standing in the middle and sort of trying to take everything on at the same time. But yeah, that's pretty much it, I think.
Alrighty then. Thank you, Raji.
No problem. Glad I could help, and hope this helps people get their kiln capes. So yeah.
Thank you. Alright, so now that we've finished our first update of Focus, I'm just going to remind everybody that you can head on over to the update website at update.rsbnb.com and fill out our little form where you can suggest topics for a future Focus. So basically in this form, we need your suggestion about what it is, of course. If it's something that requires a bit of thought, if it's a certain skill method or something like that, please do provide more information. And most importantly, please do tell us about who would be best to talk to this about. And ultimately, how do we get in contact with this person, whether it be through Forum PM, RS, YouTube, email, you name it. So we look forward to hearing your ideas for RSBNB Update Focus. And we should also mention that this idea was spurred by Uncle Dano in a little suggestion he had last month. And this is something that I've wanted to do for a while, but I just didn't know what format to do it in. So the idea from Uncle Dano kind of springboarded us into the new feature. So we hope this will be a monthly feature and that you guys have enjoyed it. So with that being said, we're on to questions now. So our first audio question this week is from Marking22.
Hey Shane, it's Marking22 here. I just recently started playing. I've been inactive since 2000, about 3 years ago. So what would you suggest for me to know, like, overall in RuneScape? Alrighty, bye.
Overall, RuneScape, that's a tough one.
The biggest thing between now and 2009 is the fact that we have free trade back again. That's one thing to definitely keep in mind, that you can actually use the Grand Exchange and put in whatever prices you'd like.
I'm going to
Things... Okay, not that we condone harming animals, but sorry for that little interruption there. I don't know. What would you say the biggest change between now, or between 2009 and now, has been, besides the free trade coming back?
I would say all the free experience you can get around RuneScape, with all the distractions you can play, like the circus, penguins. Tears of Goddess was released a while back, though. But all those little mini games that people do, like evil tree and everything else, those things actually give really good experience if you actually end up doing them every once in a while. And basically all the other free stuff you're getting by doing all the achievements.
Yeah, that is true, actually. So be on the lookout for what they're called, distraction and diversions, which is what Trekkie mentioned, the tree, the circus, and whatnot. They do give good XP, and they are a bit of a one-off, so just be on the lookout if you ever see them around RuneScape. Another thing I would mention, or that you should probably do, is get reacquainted with the way the economy works, because the economy is going to be essential to no matter whatever you're doing, providing you're not just going out and gathering all your raw materials yourself. So learn how the economy works again, because if you've been away for a while, that can be a hard thing to do. So just know what's going on with all the items you're interested in and whatnot. And in order to do that, you might want to take a look at the RSBNB Grand Exchange portfolios, which can be accessed on the RSBNB main page. So that's another good way to track your economic progress. Another thing from the times when you were gone was Dungeoneering, the Jagex's last skill they put out. Trekkie, do you call Dungeoneering a skill?
I wouldn't really call it a skill. I don't think anybody really calls it a skill. We just say that it's a mini game that you have to do.
Yes. Yeah, because I figure you have more credibility answering that question than I do, because you're what, almost 90 Dungeoneering now?
I am 90 Dungeoneering.
Okay, there you go.
Haven't bothered with getting 91 in a while.
So I don't know. You might try Dungeoneering out. It's a fun thing to do, providing you have your own group. Because if you don't have your own group, it's incredibly annoying. So if you have your own group, by all means, go for it, and it can be pretty fun.
Yeah. And best thing to do if you try is go on to our friend chat on the game and try to ask people to join you. You may end up
channel. The channel is named Bits Bytes, in case you were not aware of that, or anybody else listening was not aware of that.
Yes, and you may still end up having to pug one or two other people, but just having two or three people that you know makes things a little bit easier. Keywords, yeah. A little bit. Oh, and if you're just starting out, only do small dungeons. Don't bother with the large and stuff. You'll actually get more experience just doing many small dungeons than doing one big one. Me, Mike, and Shane found that out the hard way.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. What else is there since 2009? Lots of graphical updates, that's for sure. Providing your computer can run it, even though I know some modern computers are having trouble with that these days.
Oh. Well, they fix up Tab Relay a little bit. It's not as laggy as as the update before. Not great, but still a little bit better. Oh, and the troll thing—the monthly troll thing.
Oh yeah, troll invasion. That's another great way to get XP. I mean, I don't know. How long would you say that takes? About 10 minutes to do?
I want to be more safe and say about 15-20.
Okay.
Especially if you're new, your first time doing it, you don't know what the hell you're doing anyway.
Yeah, I've never done the combat version of it. I always do the skilling version. Have I been cutting myself out of good XP, you think?
Yeah, but lots of people do it every month. You do it once a month anyway, so...
Another thing that has happened since then is lots of quests have come out, and some very big quests, specifically Ritual of the Majorat. Ending of the Majorat series, so if you were at all interested in that series before you left, you might want to take a look at that one again. Also, the addition of Grandmaster Quest, not while Gothic Sleeps, Ritual of the Majorat was a Grandmaster Quest, but the first Grandmaster Quest was while Gothic Sleeps, which is another Majorat-based quest, which was late 2008, so I'm not sure if you would have played that or not.
And try out the Dominion Tower.
Oh, yes, of course, Dominion Tower. And we cannot forget to mention farming.
I can't say I'm surprised you said that.
Alrighty, so, I think that covers good stuff to do since you left in 2009 and you're back now. So thank you, Marking22. Next question from Bonsai. You want to read it?
Bonsai, okay. Let's see. Dear host, this question might have been asked before, but do you have any pets? If so, what pets do you have? And if you don't have any pets, why don't you? Thanks for answering my question, Bosnia. Yay, Bosnia. I'm going to stay with that. I'm killing Shane slowly.
Okay,
I know how to pronounce his name. I just didn't laugh. See?
Look how I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing to be called Bosnia.
I did it just to make Shane laugh like a little schoolgirl. Even I won.
Was like a schoolgirl.
Close enough.
All right. Do you have pets?
I got one dog. Yeah, and well, Benny and Emmett have spent a bunch of pet turtles. Which really? One of them was cannibalized by the others. I had a picture of it, but I don't know where I put my camera. I went to feed it, and there was a shell just floating up on top, and I was like, what the heck happened to this one? I picked it up and its head was gone. And the legs were gone, the tail was gone, the hand was gone, only left was the spine. Only thing there was only the other turtles, so I'm assuming they got hungry. And it was the smallest turtle, too.
I see.
I just hope that it went out painless. Well, actually, it wouldn't be painless. I'd hope that they killed it before they decided to eat it.
So, what kind of dog do you have?
A bad one.
Like an annoying dog?
Just a small one. Small dog, white dog. Never been good with breeds, so I just call it the lazy white dog.
Okay. As for me, I don't have pets because I got pretty bad allergies, especially to cats and shedding dogs. I mean, I'm sure we could find a dog that doesn't shed and is hypoallergenic, but I find dogs pretty annoying most of the time.
Oh, so you want Obama's dog?
What about that Obama's dog?
Obama's dog is hyperallergenic. It's ugly as heck, but it's hyperallergenic.
Yeah, see, I don't want an ugly dog, and I don't want an annoying dog, but in order to have a dog that is not allergenic, I would need to have an ugly or an annoying dog.
Wouldn't you like to own the ugliest dog in the world and win that contest every year?
I don't know if that would be a good claim to fame, but so I don't know.
Anyways, all right.
Thank you, Bonsai. Now, next one from AniMaster24. What is your end game in RuneScape? A completionist cape, a 200 million stat, etc. Thanks, Andy. Endgame was the name of Star Trek Voyager's last episode. Just putting that out there.
Shane,
so what's your end game?
I thought we were not doing any Star Trek related reference until someone mentions it.
I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
As for me, I don't really have an end game. I don't really have an end game. What you call it? Can't remember. My brain is so dead today. Again, I don't have an end game skill to reach. I'm just playing this until I'm either get so sick of it or I die.
Okay. I'll tell you what my ultimate end game would be. I don't know if I'll ever get there.
200 million farming?
No. 50 I'd be happy with. But here's what I want to accomplish. If I have the time and if I somehow remain interested. 99 summoning. I've always liked summoning, and it's been a skill that's appealed to me since it came out. 99 smithing, same reason. That skill's always appealed to me all the way back since when I started. And with 99 summoning, 99 mining. And the only other one I'd really like to get would be 99 runecrafting, but I don't see that happening. I really could care less about getting the rest of my combat stats maxed.
You don't want to get 99 prayer and have bragging rights?
Well, yeah, I could, but I just don't see the point, because as it is right now, you can use enough prayer potions, and I have all the prayers unlocked already. I have 95 right now. So, you know, I just don't feel like 99 prayer is a priority.
You get massive bragging rights, though.
Yeah, you would, but... And as for completionist cape, I don't think I could get through the 5,000 Castle Wars games that you're supposed to play for that.
especially now, it's kind of broken anyway. How's it broken? Same people. Same thing as any other PvP type match. You have five people camping one area and just kill everything that comes through. And they're usually the 138. One guy's ice, one guy's melee, and one guy has some crazy, some other crazy magic spell to cast, or three people with their dragon claws.
I see. Hang on. Okay. Apparently,
why?
That's the Bosnian national anthem. I was on a page about Bosnia and it just started playing.
Why?
Well, I wanted to find out more information about this country you mentioned. I knew it was a Baltic state, but that's about it.
Okay. You're weird.
Alright, next one.
All right, and the last question is from the Gurman. Hello, friends. Have God Wars on my mind this week and curious as to which bosses you have been to, which are your favorite, and why. If you have tried next, how did it go? Danke.
I've been to all four of the original bosses. I have not tried next.
Really? I like the Zamorak one the most, but I have bad luck with them because I keep dying there. And it's not
there's
in
this,
a good way.
There's this curse that whenever I go to a God Wars boss for the first time, I die. It happened with all four of them. It happened with Bandos, happened with Armadil, it happened with Saradomin, and then it happened with Zamorak. So,
well, what happened every time I went to kill Zamorak, the Zamorak boss, I end up forgetting to bring a teleport. And then I'm stuck there and I have to die because I can't get out anywhere. And I feel really sad. And last time I was there, I thought I brought my Ring of Wealth. I somehow did not. And I ended up dying and losing my Onyx, my furry amulet, and a couple other very expensive items. That was not fun.
I forget if you were here, but I got this story to tell about Saradomin. This was a while after the God Wars came out, probably 2008 or so, I'd imagine. And for some weird reason, you tell me, Trekkie, if you were with us or not. But
I don't think so.
Mike, Chief, Snake, as I'll remember, Chief Snake, and myself decided that, hey, let's go fight Saradomin. Oh, Southrend was there too. Yes, Southrend was there too. So we all decided, hey, let's go fight Saradomin. And, you know, it was a really stupid idea because we were all combat level between 110 and 120, and that was not enough to take Saradomin out. Southrend died. Then Mike died. Then I think I died. Yes, I died. And then the chief was the only one left, and he was running around, and he managed to bless all of our graves there. So we did manage to go back and pick up our items. So quite thankfully, we were able to avert total disaster there. But if you're relatively low-level combat with respect to God Wars, a four-person team is not enough to take out Saradomin, probably, unless you know exactly what you're doing.
Or you do the cheap way of getting like 100 people with a dragon with the dark bow and dragon arrows.
Yeah, or that. So, also, Armadil's another favorite boss of mine. That one, you know, you can only use ranged with that one, but still, it has the potential to drop good loot. So.
You've never tried
Armadil?
I've only done Zam and Bandos. I never bother with the others.
Okay. I don't like Bandos because it's so hard to get a decent room. I mean, you go there and like you're fighting for everybody for space. But, but you know, I think that with the addition of Nex, overall, I think the value of God Wars items have gone down a bit because Armadil Godsword is only 26 million right now. Bandos is 3.2, Saradomin 18, and Zamorak 5.4.
Wow, they really dropped.
If I go to our 180 day graph, you can see that the Armadil Godsword peaked at 53 million back in October of 2011. Then you can go even further back to this time last year in February, and it was 53 million once again as a main price. And if you go all the way back to all time in history, the max price was 125 million in December 2009.
Those were fun, eh?
Yeah, it just shows how things have happened. But no, but with regard to this, I've not fought Nex. I mean, it's something I'd like to do one day, but I don't know. You just don't have the energy. Yeah, and it's the whole RuneScape combat system and the way it works, because, you know, you have to wait for a server response whenever you want to eat or change prayers, which is incredibly annoying. So, I wish that would change, make it a little bit more entertaining to fight that way. So,
okie dokie.
All right, that's it for questions. And it's okay that we only had a few questions this week because we put the episode of Focus in. So, reminder for next week, you can send us questions. Audio questions may go to questions@rsbnb.com. Email us the attachment file. Or you may leave us a voicemail on Skype. Just add the username, rsbnbupdate, leave us a voicemail. Or phone them in like Marking did to 571-57-BNB, which translates to 571-572-2632. And for those that want to send text questions, that topic goes up on Monday on the forums. rsbnb.com/forums. All right. So, tech news. Will it be over for game discs within the decade? What do you think?
Hopefully not. I like having a hard copy, a physical copy.
Okay. I personally couldn't care less about a disc. I actually prefer digital distribution over discs because, you know, you just get it the day it comes out. You don't have to worry about the disc breaking. You just re-download it to your new computer. You can then just, you know, it's just a whole lot easier. It's out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. But anyways, this article is actually here because CNET was at the BAFTA Question Time event, and you'll never guess who was actually talking here about this. The CEO of online game developer Jagex. So that's Mark Gerhard, CEO for the game that we're actually talking about in this podcast. And he says, in a decade from now, we'll all remember when physical games were sold at retail, but we won't be buying them. I think 10 years out from now, we'll be talking about physical retail nostalgically as a museum piece. I don't think there's much that would give it a second life. So he pretty much thinks that within 10 years or so, all physical media for games and whatnot will be dead. And
it kind of also means that no more fancy box art.
Yeah, but still, imagine what you could do with a website instead of box art. Just go to a game website instead and you get interactive box art.
Yeah. Not the same.
It could be the same if you use this piece of tech news that's in our one of our other stories here that we'll get to shortly. But anyways, with this also says that although one might expect GameStop to stand in full support of that, the company seems to be sitting on the fence. The retailer is still heavily invested in physical games, but last year revealed that it expects digital game sales to grow at a 50% compound annual growth over the next several years. So even one of the biggest, I think, game retailers is accepting that digital download is the way to go.
Well, so in a way,
that's got to say something.
Well, in a way, GameStop is actually hurt by digital download, considering they like to sell used games, physically used games, and you know, digital. There's no market for them to sell to go digital unless they kind of like do the whole, mini prize if you buy it from us instead of something else. A couple years ago when was it Modern Call of Duty? What was it? Which World at War?
Modern Warfare 2?
No, before that one. World at War.
World at War, then. Yep.
And, you know, they basically said that if you buy the game at GameStop, you unlock a level 13 rifle for free. And I think that's the way they're going at it. Instead of trying to compete with digital copies, we're just going to give a little freebie here and there.
Yeah, you know, they could do that too. Like, that makes sense. I know for Star Trek Online, I actually got a physical version of that, but I got an in-game item called the Red Matter Capacitor because I just chose where to get it from. And I know people who bought it on Steam also got something different as well.
So,
I think this all started with Steam.
Yeah, I would say so. Steam made it big. But,
yeah,
you know,
and would you care to share your thoughts on EA's alternative called Origin?
I don't even want to go there.
I think that's fairly representative of what you think then.
We're basically at an impasse because one of the most anticipated game of 2012 is going to be on that platform, that distribution, and we all know how EA really doesn't like to nickel and dime everybody. And
that's
this
three.
Is yes, and where most of us here are contemplating: should we join the dark side, or should we uphold our morals, and and our way of life, and our respect for one another, or should we just say, "Oh, screw it! I know I want to play it."
Yeah, well, because EA seems to be invested in Origin fully, but you know, I don't like Origin, and like I've said before, key example would have been Battlefield 3. I might have got that if it wasn't on Origin, but I think it's good that they are going to that distribution means, because it's always good for Steam to have some kind of competition.
They've had a couple competition, although I guess now they have someone who has the pocket money to really go at it. You know, like, what was it, Direct Download and GOG?
Oh, yeah, right.
In GOG. I think it's GOG.
Yeah.
We're both digital downloads, although they're not as big. EA basically has like, you know, enough money to basically buy Steam if they wanted to.
Yeah, I just want to mention one more thing on this before we move on to the next one. But what does this mean for consoles like Wii, Xbox, and PS3?
Well, keep in mind, though, even the PlayStation Vita is going the digital route. I just remember the last PlayStation Go, I think that was the name of it, basically went full on digital distribution. There was no physical copies whatsoever. And, you know, even now Wii is doing the whole virtual console thing, so they're already kind of doing that for their own system. Xbox is kind of doing it, although they're mostly doing for demos and little things here and there.
Yeah, that's the thing I was wondering about. I mean, I don't see Xbox game developers going digital because Microsoft wants them to.
I think the other problem is that we gamers will probably have is that, well, if everybody's going full on digital, why are we still paying that $60? You're not, there's no middleman anymore. Why are we still paying?
It should be at least cut down to $30 or $40 rather than the $60 if it's digital, I think.
And, you know, whether it were, you know, some people would say may hurt the economy, yes or no. Well, you know, do what you think. But thing is that, you know, if you're supposed to go on full digital, then why do we still have to pay for the middleman? You're just not, just the extra money you're getting isn't helping anybody. You're just helping yourselves, which is why one of the big problems with the PlayStation Go, because, you know, even though every game people bought were all digital copies, they still had to pay the full price, which many people thought it was absurd. If you're saving money by doing this, why don't you pass on the savings to us?
Yeah, so I don't know. I think the whole point of this story is that that's probably the way of the future, and credit to Jagex for being there first in that realm.
You know what we're waiting for, Shane, right?
What? Ubuntu for Android?
No, waiting for the holodeck.
Yep. Well, that's also getting closer to this other tech story we have. But let's talk about Ubuntu for Android now. So, for those of you who don't know, Ubuntu is a Linux desktop operating system. So basically what they're doing is they're taking this, and it already works for the ARM architecture. So it makes sense. You can have Ubuntu on your Android phone. So Canonical, the company behind Ubuntu, is actually going to be partnering with a couple of manufacturers in order to create an Ubuntu-based phone. So essentially what will happen here is that you'll have all of your data and whatnot, all of your phone apps on your phone. Then you can just bring it back to your computer, dock it, and you get a full-blown Ubuntu desktop with the ability to access your phone applications as well as your desktop applications, and they work together in one.
Which is always good.
Yeah, the only thing I'm not exactly sure about this is if your phone is used for the compute power or not. Because if your phone was used for the compute power, that would kind of be limiting in the fact that you don't have a full-fledged desktop CPU at your disposal.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could always wait for the tablet version again.
Yeah, you could.
There's technically no iPad killer yet, and many people are still waiting for it. But will it show up? Well, basically, Apple will have to really screw up with iPad 3 and for that to happen. Or they find a way to really reduce price on the others. Like, really, really reduce the price.
Yeah. Like, as an example here, you'll be able to take phone calls and send messages from your desktop when it's docked. Default applications will include Chromium, Google Calendar, Google Docs, Thunderbird, Gwibber, VLC, and few others, so it's definitely something interesting. Do you think you'd get an Android, or I mean an Ubuntu-based phone, or do you want to keep it separate?
Oh no, like, you know, I'm not as nerdy as you, Shane, so I have absolutely no experience with Ubuntu or Linux for that matter. And I just don't know if I would really bother with it anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, for most people, I think Android would be good enough, but for people who want to have both together, this might be a good thing. But once again, I'm concerned about the power users and their ability to have a stronger CPU on their computer. It'd be nice if you could just dock your phone and not have to worry about using your phone as the actual processor.
Yeah,
to ensure that you have the right speed.
And it will probably make it very, very hot, which, you know, heat is the enemy of all electronics. Heat and water.
Yep. So, this is definitely something I'm going to watch because Ubuntu has been a distribution for a long time, and it's about time that they actually start expanding and becoming a commonplace thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next up, Google to sell heads-up display glasses by year-end. I'd like some of these, don't you think?
Heads-up display. It reminds me of heads-up display reminds me of what was that old Tiger game long time ago. It was a long time ago when we were kids, Shane. It was like a little 3D. It was like a 3D gimmick where you supposedly like be able to play a video game while we're like having the heads-up display, and you were fighting each other in a fighting type game. That's what it reminds me of, but.
Okay.
It was a long time ago. I bet most people forgot about it anyway. I don't remember what the name of it was called.
They say that these will run Android. Once again, another Android story here. They'll retail between $250 and $600. The idea is that they'll be used in the same way a smartphone is used. So rather than having just a smartphone, you'll just have these things on your head. And suppose you decide to get a call, it'll just get routed into your Bluetooth headset. And you'll take your call from there. And, you know, of course you'll be able to access all other kinds of information and stuff on here. But they also have a little camera so that it can use that to get information about your surroundings to offer more details. So say you go somewhere and you want to find more information about this thing you're looking at. You can just look at it and you'll get more information displayed up on your heads-up display. And it's also worth noting that they say in order to scroll and click, it uses motions of your head.
Motions of your head, okay. So you'll be walking down the street and be like nodding your head up, down, left, right, sideways, and everybody thinks you're psychotic.
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, it makes sense to go this route because technology is getting smaller and smaller. So rather than just having it on you like in a phone, why not have it just embedded in something you're wearing?
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is that people can barely talk and walk. And having a heads-up display, I think it may actually make more people worse.
Well, I mean we'd have to assume it would be fairly unobtrusive, just like a regular heads-up display might be in, like, a fighter jet or airplane.
But, the thing is, I'm more curious about is, you know, well, I'm assuming since heads-up display, you can see through it with all the little thing. And
yes,
you know, if the sun hits it, and or if you're wearing glasses, that could be also a bigger problem.
Yeah, that could be a bit of an issue.
I wear glasses, so it's kind of hard for me to wear those stupid 3D stuff for TVs. It's like I'm not wearing two pairs just to watch this one little stupid movie. It's just not worth it.
That's the main reason I hate 3D movies.
Oh, it's a gimmick. Hopefully, it will die.
Yeah, like you said earlier, we're waiting for the holodeck. But I'd be interested in acquiring a set of these glasses.
Use it for fun, but hopefully people don't use it for I don't know, getting around. I can still see people, you know, suddenly, oh hey Jimmy, oh hi, oh crap, the whole Hold on, I gotta fix my heads up display. All right, let me see. I got so twice to the left. Not once down. Yes, no, no, yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes, no, no. Okay, what's up? You know that's going to happen. It's, you know, unavoidable.
Another thing you could use it for is if you don't know somebody you're seeing, you could just have it so, like, let's say you're bad with names. You see it recognize someone, and it'll say, yes, this is Anson. Mm. Yes, this is Brad, etc.
Actually, that technology was, I remember watching an article many years ago when they started had a prototype on this, and it was a heads-up display, and basically every time you saw somebody, and they would automatically put out their entire profile, so you knew exactly who this person was, who their person was, what's his career, what's his position, and all the little nuances that you told it.
Yeah, that's good.
Onto it. But it was prototype.
Or even augment it with other sensory data, you know, and as well as the whole heads up to view smartphone kind of stuff. And that'd be kind of like those headsets the Dominion used to use on Star Trek DS9 there.
Or Star Trek Elite Force.
Yeah, that too.
Yes. All right, I went there. I'm not going back there for the rest of the show.
Yes, so that's it for Techies. So we hope you enjoyed that segment. All right, on to other things now. February skill of the month update.
This got interesting.
Yeah, it has, hasn't it?
Oh, yes.
We did hope that we would see some changes in the graph last week, which has happened a bit, but not entirely. Currently, Rod Say is still in place with first place with 3.4 million XP gained. Second place is Tim with 2.7 million XP gained. Then we go all the way down to 878,000 to find third place, who is Minor Goo.
So there's basically 1 week left, and good luck to you, to both of you. And yeah, you have exactly 5 more days left.
Oh, that's an insane amount of Hunter XP that Tim has got so far. It'll be interesting to see how they can hold up here.
We'll find out next Tuesday if who's going to be ahead and who has lots of catching up to do.
Yeah.
And
so.
All right.
What are you laughing about?
I'm just trying to picture Tim going all crazy like trying with hunting. I can imagine. Well, actually, it's reading week, so that's usually why he's has so much time and got up so quickly. But
I'm curious what he'll do.
I'm curious what he'll do next week.
So, all right. Achievements of the week, none this week. But as a reminder to everybody, if you do want to be a part of Achievements of the Week, all you need to do is sign up for our forums and enter in your RuneScape name in that profile and set your status to members, assuming you're a member, and eventually you will be picked up in the high scores. And you need to be a member of RSBNB for the last month, have posted in a forum with post count for the last month, and have logged in with the past 2 weeks in order to appear on the high scores. So, you know, I get some people asking me, why aren't I on the high scores? But this is exactly why. Because there is a bit of a requirement to get on, and this is what we do to track these achievements, because if we don't do that, it would just be way, way too hard to track down everybody who might want to have an achievement on the show.
Mm-hmm. So come on to the forums, post something, say something nice.
We're nice people for the most part.
Most part, keyword. Couple yes. of people here and there who wish was never came out into this world, but we won't name names.
Okay. Whatever you say. So, anyways, I think it's time for a pick.
That was your pick.
Yep. So, normally I like to choose a pick, something that is useful, but that's not the case this week. It might be useful, but I don't know. It depends on what you need and what you like doing. So what this is a little application for iPhone and iPod It's called Clear. It's a to-do list application. You can get it in the App Store for 99 cents. It doesn't have many features. It's just essentially a list of things that you have to do. There's no sync. There's nothing fancy. There's no printing of lists. There's no sharing of lists. There's no subtasks. So it's just a bare-bones to-do list. But the idea behind it is that it's a completely new user interface designed for touch. So, you know, we all know a standard to-do list has a checkbox followed by an item name and maybe some other supplementary information. This has none of that. It's all gesture-based. So, for example, if you want to add a new to-do item, all you do is you pull down on the screen. Or you can pinch between two other tasks to put a to-do item in a certain spot. You can also drag tasks around. And you can also use gestures to navigate between lists. And there's about four gestures that you use in the entire application. And it provides for a very intuitive interface once you learn how to use it. And granted, there aren't that many features, but I think the whole point of having this application is to show that this is kind of the way things are going in the future for touch-based applications, rather than just trying to emulate what the desktop does for interfaces. Because, you know, we have the ability to touch, so why not do something different than the desktop? So it's called Clear, and it's from a company called Real Mac Software, and you can find it in the App Store. But it also has some interesting sounds that I'll just go through right now.
Okie dokie.
There you go.
It sounded like Mario.
Oh, really? That's probably because it was over the mic. It sounds more like a xylophone when you're actually right next to it.
Yeah. To me, it sounded like Mario when he started picking up coins.
Oh, okay. Also, if you don't have an iPod or an iPhone, you can take a look at this. There's even a video of it, so links in the show notes at update.rspmb.com. All right. And this week's the last week for our winter survey, so please do fill that out. I was looking at some of the results last night, and it's good to see those coming in. So one more week to fill that out. It would help us greatly.
And lastly, don't forget that I have my own little tournament. Well, not tournament, competition with voice acting. So remember the script from Jagex and, you know, upload it on through Google Voice or whatever format you like, and we'll pick the top three. And once again, the first place winner gets 100,000 gold. Second place gets 50,000, and the last one, third place, gets 25,000. And you know, it's my money, not Shane's, not RSBNB, my money. All right. So if you want some of my money, you gotta do this little thing for me. And let's just say the amount of participation is average.
I.e. so, one?
Don't say one. That's no fun.
Yeah, okay. So won't say please, who, do, but please do help Trekkie with that. All right. So what have you been up to this week?
Well, early this week, I made $8 million dollars.
Doing?
I made it. Making my glory amulets, Dragonstone ended up crashing hard, and all of mine came in all at once. Like, whoa! And I sold every single one of the glories for 30k each, and I bought every one of those Dragonstones for 25, so I didn't make 8 million gold in about like 4 hours. That was good.
That cut Dragonstone is currently going for 26k.
Yeah, but glories went down a little bit too, and I think they'll mellow out on 27.
All right. Anything else?
Did some slaying, kill some stuff. Okay. Got a summoning level.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Anyways, for me this week, I went for a few floors in the Dominion Tower, of course. I also spent a bit of time looking into what exactly the fight kiln is for our interview that you just heard earlier in this episode. Mm. And I have also been doing my own money making with potion flasks. Those are still making good money. So if you have the level, please do be sure that you are mining your stuff every day. Or I mean your sandstone every day, because oh my, they went up again. Ooh, that's great.
A lot.
Yeah.
Ooh, so Shane's, nice. Shane has a glint in his eye.
Yeah, I'm a very happy Ferengi right now.
I was a very happy Ferengi when. Oh wait, I'm not making another Star Trek reference. Never mind. Not going there, Shane. All right.
So I think that means we're done with this episode, unless you have anything else you want to mention.
Come on, join the script. You may end up knowing that you have a knack for acting.
Yeah, so do enter the voice acting competition and do the survey. Links to all that and all the other good stuff we discussed are available at update.rsbnb.com. So with that being said, we'll see you all next week. Goodbye, everyone.
Night-night. Peace. May the Force be with you. We'll be right back.